my husband, how's the baby supposed to crawl? We have tile. I said, hey, guess what? Before there was tile, there were dirt floors, and babies crawled.
Their bodies work on that, too.
I was like, you are so weird. It's That's so cool. hard, honey. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know.
There you go. That'll
like,
work.
I don't know what to tell you.
That'll work.
I'm about ready to put her on
this floor now. So last week, Hosea, wrapping up Hosea. Lisa, how'd it go?
Oh, Lisa.
What was your favorite thing? I know you're loving the baby.
I'm looking at the baby. Like,
what was your favorite thing about Hosea before we start Obadiah?
The whole book or just
yeah,
the
just either, both.
Oh, I totally missed that. Just how, like, even though you have to deal with certain consequences to your actions, like, God still, he still makes it so obvious how he's still there.
Yeah.
And how he'll take you back and still work with you and be so gracious.
I knew a guy years ago, and he would always talk about how God, you know, God was punishing him, God was spanking him, God was taking him, like, let me give you a different perspective to maybe work from. So if you're running full tilt, heading through a doorway, and God says, you know, my child, there's a 2x4, you need to duck. And you just keep plowing ahead and slam your head into that 2x4, it's not really God doing something to you. It's you not doing what you need to do. And if you stumble and kind of get back up and he says, duck for the 2x4, and you run full tilt again into it, still not him doing anything. Yeah. He's not wanting you to suffer. He's warning you about the 2x4. And eventually, whether it's because you slammed your head into it so much that you're dizzy and you duck because you can't help it, or you actually decide to listen,
yeah,
you know, that's the how you have to get through the door. And he was like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. I said, it's not like you go around wondering. You know, God's not some arbitrary parent who says, oh, no, that was it. Now you're done. He says over and over, duck, duck. You know, go around that one. Yeah, foot to the left or the right.
When I became a parent, it was like, dude, I get God so much more.
Yeah.
It was like, Mark, honey, don't jump on the couch.
Yeah.
Mark, don't jump on the couch.
And he falls.
And then next thing I know, it's like, boom. And I'm like, you know, that's what I was thinking.
Right.
I went over there, you know, I hugged him, okay, and he's crying, and I said, well,
did you learn anything?
Yeah. You know, he's like,
won't happen every time, but it'll happen enough that you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And one other thing, how about you, Marie? What was your favorite part of Hosea?
Kind of like what Lisa said, you know, it was like when God told him, you know, things that would happen,
mm-hmm,
you know, because of their sin, because of their disobedience, but yet he showed them so much love.
Well, and he kept saying, it's not the people's fault.
Right.
Nobody taught them.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Who did you relate to most in the story? Just any of you who were here for any of the weeks, who did you relate to?
What I wanted to say one thing.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa played for us, just to bring that home for us. She played us this little thing that she found on the internet about a pastor who lost his music minister and pastor, right? He lost his voice. And a woman had asked him the question, can you find a God of mercy in Job, in the book of Job?
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave a speech to her. He said, yes. And yes, I can.
There's mercy all over the book.
He said, did you notice
of
God never left you?
Right.
It's just beautiful. I mean, he said more than that. But mm-hmm, his finishing part was that God never left him.
Right.
You know.
I know.
He said the last thing you want God to do is leave you alone.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, even if you ask him.
Yeah.
Never left Job alone.
I know there was at least one season of my life where I took great comfort in the fact that Job shook his fist at God and was called righteous. It's like, I don't know what you're doing, but it's got to end soon, right? You know? And if not, you got to give me the strength to get through this because, oh my word.
Mm-hmm.
So who did you relate to most in Hosea? Which character? I mean, because there's God, there's Hosea,
and
there's his wife, there's the
I'm
children.
His wife.
Well, you know, I was gonna
God
say,
like really, really.
I was gonna say it's very easy. I think
like,
it's very easy to relate
there
to Hosea. I mean, not that we've been asked to do something that intense, but it's really easy to go, oh yes, there are so many people I am enduring. And yet I do think we're supposed to relate to the wife. I do think we're supposed, I mean.
Well, I relate to it on a kind of more of a just all of us level too, though, because it's like, right, when I'm reading it, I'm like, this is crazy because, you know, as believers, we all kind of tiptoe to the side, you know, and he's
it's the whole
thing. Like how, you know, he was like, go and pay the price.
He doesn't stop us.
It's like, that's your free will, but then he's still, he's still there.
Redeeming. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, Cheat on him all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in my mind, I'm like, I don't know if you'll forgive me again, but,
you know. When I came back to him after my my wandering years, we'll call it, that was my favorite. God, do you want me back? You know, will you take, really? You know what I did, right? Like, you saw who I was and what I did. And
that's why that song makes me cry, that one where it says, you know, you see the depths of my heart and you love me the same. Mm-hmm. And it's like sometimes that those words would just make me boo hoo when I hear that song. So I'm like, because I'm so ugly inside.
Yeah.
God, like, you know.
I know, but then he said, you know, he makes you not, though. Because that's why he says you're worthy, because he says you're worthy.
That flesh side of you feels so. I know. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I shared about the. Well, I told you about the thing we did with the kids with the magnets. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Because we put them, we were doing a lesson with the kids one night at one of the homeschool. I don't even know why we were there. We were just doing something. And we had these big magnets, and we put a glass of water over on one end, and one of the big high-powered magnets there. And on the other end of the island, it was a table because it was really big. We put the other magnet and had someone holding it so it wouldn't move. And we told the kids, we said, so this glass of water represents God, you know, and the Holy Spirit's there with the water. And, you know, this is God over here. And over here is not God. You know, this is everything that's away from him. And I said, so one of the questions a lot of people ask is, how far away from God is it safe to be? How far before you've gone too far? And so we kept moving, you know, we moved the magnet a little bit and we'd let it go. And we're like, is that too far? And they're like, well, it seems to be okay. And so we got to somewhere, you know, somewhere in this far away from the other magnet range. And when I took my hand away, it just went and sucked right over there. And I said, they all were like, whoa, you went too far. And I said, that is how sin works. I said, you keep thinking, well, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're so far beyond not okay, and you don't know how you got there. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what do we do? What's the problem? What's the lesson here? And, she was grandma. She announced it all right. She said, I am with grandma today. and one of the kids said, or I said, is there a better question we can ask? How should we be looking at this? And one of the kids said, well, why don't you just stay over there close to the water? And I went, oh, like this? And they're like, yeah, because it never goes that far. You're okay over there. And I said, yeah. What if we ask the question, how close to God can I get? How close, you know, is there closer more I can go? Is there closer more? Because then we don't have to worry about, where's that line? Have I stepped over it? What am I doing? You know, how can I hold it together? And I'm still looking good, right? I still look good from the outside. Because Hosea was not allowed to look good from the outside. Think about the people in the town who saw him and knew this.
Yeah,
that's a real pride killer when you have to go buy your wife off the auction block. You know.
And everybody's like,
yeah. I know.
It's kind of like that movie when the guy was Temptations, when he was trying to get his wife back, and he's like, you know, have to go like in this like risque club, and she's all like, you know,
yeah, it's
too far gone, and he's still like, but I love you, like trying to get her, like, come with me, you know, even though she's still being like a little booger, you know what I mean? And it's just like, how embarrassing is that to have to go to a place like that for someone that you love? And trying to, you're like, but I still love you, come back, you know what I mean?
I know my mom, different but similar, years ago, you know, she was driving and somebody cut her off and she got all mad and she, I don't know, and she goes, God, that's why I can't put one of those fish on my car, because then, you know, people will see me do that and they'll know that I represent you, and I don't want to represent you poorly. And he just very quietly said, I've survived worse. She was like, oh, okay. You know, but we have. And we can, you know, I think we do need to relate to everybody in that story. And we need to ask, do you want to come with us? You want to come over here? Because I just want to wander around eating the... So we're gonna tackle Obadiah today. And when I say today, I mean literally today, because it is one chapter long. Okay. You will not miss anything. If something happens next week, you're good, we're covered. Yeah, well, you know, there's not that too much. And feel free to share. You've probably taught on Obadiah many more times than I have. But just kind of some background, a little introduction before we jump in reading. Where we are right now, we're in the divided kingdom, okay? Northern kingdom, it's, you know, this is during the reigns of Jehu, 841 to 814, and then Jehoahaz, 814 to 798. And in the southern kingdom, we have Queen Athaliah. And do you remember her story?
No.
Yeah.
Was she bad?
Oh, very bad.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, she was the one that we were like, oh. Yeah. She, we'll get to her in the next slide. Basically, as far as prophets go, he's a peer of Elisha. And the prophecy that he had was for Edom. So remember, we looked at the Edomites and yeah. How, you know, we talked about how all of it... I kind of wish that there weren't so many different names for all the different places and the people, and you know, because sometimes you think you're talking about somebody new, and you're like, oh, it was just those people. And yeah, this is, you know, Edom. We encountered that with the guy from was from Bethlehem. Remember that? So yeah, that was when we looked that up. So on the next one, Athaliah was brought from the northern kingdom, where she was either the daughter of King Omri or his son who became king, King Ahab, though probably not from his wife Jezebel. So, you know, she could have been worse, is what they're saying. She was bad, but she probably could have been worse. And then she married Jehoram. And when he died, their son Ahaziah ruled for 1 year. And then in 1 Chronicles 22:3, he also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And then Ahaziah, so the son, you know, he was killed in a dynastic struggle in 2 Kings 9. And Athaliah attempts to kill all the other heirs to the throne. Do you remember that when she went through and killed everybody else who had claim to the throne?
But except for that one.
Joash.
Yes. I was like, who was that?
Yeah.
They had,
yeah. And she took power for herself, and she reigned for 6 years. And then there was a vie for power from the priest Jehoiada, who had been hiding Joash in the temple. Because he was rescued when he was, he was a year old, and now he's 7. So he brought him back. And then the Bible and Chronicles and Kings associates her with Baal worship because, you know, that's what she was raised with. So Obadiah's name means servant of God or worshiper of Yah. Some of the variations on the name in the Septuagint, it's Obdios, in the Latin, Abdios, the Bishop's Bible, Abdi. Just different names you might come across. Yeah, but servant of God, which is neat because he's, you know, Elisha is also, I mean, all the prophets' names all, you know, tend to have something to do with servant or loved of or, and one of the things I was talking online with some people this week, and one of the things that just kind of hit me different or, you know, it was just kind of a really strange realization is, you know, God had put in place the system of judges. And then the people wanted the king.
Right. Yeah.
And God warned them and said, you really don't want a king. You just think you want a king. I know that sounds nice and you want what everybody else is doing and all the kids are having a king now, but, you know, you really trust me, you don't want a king. And they're like, no, we want a king. And he said, and this is one of the things that, you know, I try to remind people when you're going through those stories, you're thinking, oh, this is so horrible. Why are they being, you know, suffering for what he's doing? God told them up front, they're going to do things. And here's how you're going to suffer. This is what they are going to bring on you. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, all those things happen. And it's not because God's threatening them. He's warning them. He's saying, please, these are going to happen. You don't want that, right? And you're like, well, you know, if that's what we got to do to have a king, I guess we'll do that, you know. And yet, if you think, you know, just the realization that hit me is the prophets are the judges. You know, when the judges, when the system of judges was in place, it was the prophets that everybody was going to for wisdom. So God put the king there. He said, fine, have a king. He can be king. But God never took away the judges. And the times when the kings listened to the judges, it's all good. There's peace. Everybody's happy. Everybody's getting along. I mean, you know, stuff goes wrong, but it's not like, you know, sieges and you know, whole-scale plagues going through villages and things. So, you know, the judges were still there. And you know, we even see with David, all the stuff he did wrong, still when he was confronted by the judge, you know, he who came and said, hey, this is going on, and he would repent. And, you know, again, comfort in the fact that David was a man after God's own heart, despite all that he did. I know. Just can't. But you know, they're serving as the judges. So when they're bringing these cautions and they're bringing these warnings and they're doing all these things, you know, the kings have the ability to listen, you know, but what? Which one was it? He's like, oh, I don't like that prophet. He always says bad things. You know,
he never says good things about me. Begging for a king, and then God still allows them to have it, and like makes me think of how many people beg for God to give them stuff, and then
gives
it to them, knowing that it won't benefit them at all.
I know.
That sucks. Because you just be like, no, you know, no, can't have it.
I know.
Deal with it, Lisa.
But there's a lesson or something in there that's going to help you grow.
Well, with praying, because the fact that you're asking for it means you haven't yet figured out what you need to know to not ask for it.
But that's like asking for a bigger house, and then he gives you a bigger house, and you're like, these bills. And he's like, but you wanted a bigger house.
Right, so it can't be.
If you live in Arizona, how do you cool off that bigger
I know, right? I know. Like, it's crazy.
You really want the grass to be greener.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things when we were struggling with it was finances, and it was like, oh God, what are we doing here? And he got me to this place of just praying, Lord, if you are who you say you are, then you will do what you say you will do. And you said you'll provide all my needs. So if you haven't provided it, it must not be a need.
Yep, there you go.
And that was a real hard place to get to. And yet when I got there, I realized, oh, I can make do with a lot less than I thought I could. And I can, you know, I can struggle and be okay. And God's going to take care of it, because what we need, he'll give when it's actually a need. So the rabbinic tradition, because there's controversy, you know, really, any book of the Bible, do I need to say there's controversy? I mean, there's some people arguing something about it somewhere, you know? Yes. Is it authentic? Is it really about what it says? Did God mean that? Should it have been included? You know? So the rabbinic tradition, because the controversy is this the Obadiah that's mentioned in the books of Kings and Chronicles? And I'm going, why wouldn't it be? You know, why would there suddenly be some other Obadiah? You know, a lot of, you know, is he really from, you know, where was he, you know, from the area with Ahab and what?
It just makes me laugh inside, because it's like anytime there was another so-and-so, we saw that it was like not the one that.
Right, because they'll say, that's right. Because we go through the books, they're like.
If there was another Obadiah, I'm sure it's like not the one that he mentioned here.
I know, and all those funny little clips, you know, this guy, yeah, and this was the one who was the cousin of so-and-so, yeah, and was at that battle. That's how you know which one. I know, and it never said that about Obadiah. So the rabbinic tradition is that he was a Jewish convert from Edom and a descendant of Eliphaz, who was a friend of Job, which it was interesting because you brought up Job earlier. So the idea is that he's a descendant of Eliphaz. And that he was chosen to prophesy against Edom because he was an Edomite. So it wasn't someone coming from outside. She doesn't have shoes. Oh, okay. and that he had been in the court of Ahab and Jezebel, but did not succumb to their wickedness or embrace it as his own. Does she have something in her foot? maybe. And that the rabbinic teaching is that he was given the gift of prophecy for having hidden the 100 prophets from Jezebel in 1 Kings 18, 3 and 4. So if you remember that, when you know, that was kind of where we encountered him the first time, is that he was the one in the court, and he was hiding everyone. And the teaching is that Obadiah's fear of God was thought to be 1 degree higher than that of Abraham.
Wow.
So he was counted as having, you know, more fear and honor of God
Than Abraham.
Than Abraham, yeah. And he, the idea of, you know, how he came to where he was is that all of his money went into taking care of those 100 prophets for all that time. And so that's how he ended up, you know, where he was and not there anymore. And the idea is that if Ahab's reign had any hope of being blessed, it would have been because of Obadiah. And, you know, we've encountered that so many times with God saying, you know, well, what if there's, you know, 100 righteous, or what if there's 10 righteous, or what, you know, and the idea that the reason that Israelites went into Canaan when it was is because Job had finally died and God had been holding back everything else just because of that, you know, one righteous person. And so, you know, this is one of the ways they look at him. And so it's interesting, you know, and he's not just some nobody. He's not just some nobody would know him. So when he brings this prophecy, they know who he is. You know, the descendant of Eliphaz, the guy from Ahab's court, you know, who defied Jezebel and hid 100 prophets. You maybe listen when he brings a prophecy. You maybe should tune in a little bit. So jumping into Obadiah in verse 1, the vision of Obadiah. This is what the Lord God says about Edom. We have heard news from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent among the nations saying, arise and let's rise up against her in battle. Okay, so we're already looking at a very different prophetic book than Hosea. Hosea was, you go do this very personal thing. It's going to be a picture. We're going to teach. This is what we're doing. And this is a little more, it has a more formal kind of feeling to it. So the Lord is telling them that an ambassador is sent among the nations to arise and come up against her in battle. Behold, I have made you small among the nations. You are greatly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you, you who dwell in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, who says in his heart, who will bring me down to the ground? So you know, yes, they dwell in the clefts of the rock. Their habitation is high. They are God's people, and yet they are small among the nations and greatly despised, because that was not supposed to be the response of dwelling in the clefts of the rock. And, you know, it was not supposed to be a thing of pride. And they're saying, you know, oh, we have all these, who will bring me down to the ground? He says, though you mount on high as the eagle, and though your nest is set among the stars, I will bring you down from there, says the Lord. If thieves came to you, if robbers by night, oh, what disaster awaits you. Wouldn't they only steal until they had enough? If grape pickers came to you, wouldn't they leave some gleaning grapes? How Esau will be ransacked, how his hidden treasures are sought out. All the men of your alliance have brought you on your way, even to the border. The men who were at peace with you have deceived you and prevailed against you. Friends who eat your bread lay a snare under you. There is no understanding in him. And we saw this several times with, you know, with the kings, where they'd have an alliance with somebody, but then they'd go and make a pact, you know, usually Egypt. Or, you know, there are a couple of them who would just always be kind of, they would think they were safe because they had this alliance, and then it would turn out, nope, they have an alliance with someone else. Won't I, in that day, says the Lord, destroy the wise men out of Edom and understanding out of the mountain of Edom? Your mighty men, Teman, will be dismayed to the end that everyone may be cut off from the mountain of Esau by slaughter. For the violence done to your brother Jacob, shame will cover you, and you will be cut off forever. In the day that you stood on the other side, in the day that strangers carried away his substance and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, even you were like one of them. But don't look down on your brother in the day of his disaster, and don't rejoice over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Don't speak proudly in the day of distress. Don't enter into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Don't look down on their affliction in the day of their calamity, neither seize their wealth on the day of their calamity. So he's telling them, you know, when Jerusalem is taken down, you know, it's not because you're better than them. It's not because you don't deserve it too. It's not because you've done any great thing that you're being rewarded for. You know, and so be careful. He says, don't stand in the crossroads to cut off those of his who escape. You know, don't join that mob. Don't be thinking, oh, God's taking them down. Let's get in on this. He says, no, you know, don't block those who escape. Don't deliver up those of his who remain in the day of distress. For the day of the Lord is near all the nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. So, you know, if you won't listen just because I'm telling you to, do it for self-preservation. Verse 16, for as you have drunk on my holy mountain, so will all the nations drink continually. Yes, they will drink, swallow down, and will be as though they had not been. But in Mount Zion, there will be those who escape, and it will be holy. The house of Jacob will possess their possessions. The house of Jacob will be a fire, the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. They will burn among them and devour them. There will not be any remaining to the house of Esau. Indeed, the Lord has spoken.
Stubble?
Yeah, like just the little sticks, kind of, you know, the rubble.
Like it's burned?
Yeah. So those of the south will possess the mountain of Esau, and those of the lowland, the Philistines. They will possess the field of Ephraim and the field of Samaria. Benjamin will possess Gilead. The captives of this army of the children of Israel who are among the Canaanites will possess even to Zarephath, and the captives of Jerusalem who are in Sepharad will possess the cities of the Negev. Saviors will go up on Mount Zion to judge the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. Yeah, I know. I forgot to remove those, that's all. I think I've gone blind. I can't see the words. That's one chapter. That's it. That's Obadiah.
Short.
Like, where's the it ends happy? So what do you think? What, like, just kind of respond. I mean, other than sure, because it's yeah, very intense. Not very happy. How would you like to get that letter?
I'm like, you know what? Wrong address.
Well, yeah, and see, that's why do you think a letter like that would need to be sent, or why do you think a prophet would need to come with that message? You know, I've always said, you know, everybody nowadays wants to go searching. You know, oh, let's go see the prophet. Oh, there's a prophet coming, and they're holding a tent. That's not how God works with the prophets, really. If a prophet's coming to you, you should maybe be worried that you've done something wrong.
I know my coworker is always inviting me to her church, and they, like, every single week, it's like they have some featured prophet there, and I'm like, I do not.
Yeah, you're like, I'm reading the prophets. I will stay home. Thank you.
Prophet so and so going to do this time, and then next time it's prophet so and so, and then it's prophet so and so, and then another prophet.
No, and I'm like,
oh my goodness.
And you know what? If God had a prophet for you, He would send them right to you.
That's right.
They would cross your path.
No warning.
You would not.
I didn't go. And then she was like, why didn't you go? You missed it. This guy got prophesied over and he said, you're going to have a church and be successful in church. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure all that hyped up prosperity stuff might not have been.
Yes, I've read the things God says through the prophets. And
I don't remember.
We're okay. We're good.
Yeah, like, it was just kind of creepy.
Well, because what's he saying to them? I mean, what's, like, the message?
All, she says it's all good stuff. Like, she said he pointed at one guy and was like, you're going to be a pastor, and you're going to own a mega church. And everybody's like, yay, he's going to own a mega church.
And the thing is, he might, but that doesn't mean that it's because the prophet said so. If the prophet's right, then God was going to do it all along no matter what. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it can be really good in that, you know, what my qualifiers for whether a prophecy is something that I even consider. It will either convict you of something you've already been being convicted of and weren't listening. It will encourage you about something you've already been encouraged about but aren't listening. Or it will be about something in the future, in which case, file it away, and it'll either happen or it won't. And it's not because of anything you do or don't do. It's just because if it's true, God was going to do that already. And so, you know, there was a prophecy, you know, that I got at a time where I was, you know, my wandering years, and I came back and I said, you know, where I'm going, God, let there be, you know, I know it's a night of moving in the spirit. Let the pastor have a prophecy for me that just speaks to what I'm going through. And that was my, I don't know if you want me back. I need to know, like, very directly you want me back, because I don't think you really want me. I don't want me. And he did that, you know, and there were very personal things, and it was, but the things that were about the future, I put aside, and I said, okay, you know, we're going to work on the, you want me back. Yay. I still don't feel worthy, but that's good for now. That's enough. And you know, there were, if God sent a prophet, I believe it's because there were righteous people there. Yeah. And it was for the righteous people to know. So that when things started happening, they wouldn't go, why is that happening? How should we respond? What's going on? Why is God doing this? Because he tells them. He says, this is going to happen. This is why. This is how it's going to affect you. Don't take joy in what's happening to them.
Yeah,
you know, how many times when somebody's brought low, are there people around who just really seem to get a little too much joy out of that? And you know, it's like, ooh. Wow,
I had to check myself.
Rejoice so much.
It happened to someone that had done me wrong. Like, mm-hmm. I had to check myself real hard because, like, I had heard about what they were going through, and part of me was like, and? Like,
yeah.
Who they did to me, you know? But
right.
At the same time, it was like, well, Tanya, stop it. Because that is kind of like, you know what I mean?
Right, and that's.
But I couldn't feel sorry for them at the same time because I was like, but you were so shady.
And yet, you know what?
With a bunch of other people that now that's coming back on you, it's hard for me to feel sorry for you at the same time.
Well, and there's a place for saying, you know, that's justice. But then having experienced justice, and the more I see about what happens when justice is served, it's moved me to a place of sadness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've started praying, you know, when people have wronged me and I've realized what's going on, and it's just, there's a part of my flesh that's going, oh, they will get theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I have to remind myself, no, go in prayer, because that's not a good thing. Them getting theirs isn't good. Them learning and changing and avoiding getting theirs, even better.
Yeah.
And I would so prefer that report. I would prefer that outcome. And so, you know, there's this aspect here of, you know, I'm giving you this information. You need to check yourselves. You need to do this. Don't rejoice when this all happens. And yet, when these things all happen, they can know that it's from God. And not question why it's happening. Because sometimes, you know, especially if you're used to chasing all the prophets with the good news, you think only the good things come from God. And I've gotten to a place where there is no good, there is no bad, there's just what our perspective shows us. I mean, there's good and evil, but there's, you know, as far as, well, that was good or that was bad.
She said that was wicked, but when we read that, and it was like, but that was her opinion on what wicked is.
Right.
That was actually wicked.
Right. And so, you know, if I think something's bad, I have to, you know, I have to go to the Lord and say, well, is it evil? Or is there something I'm not understanding? Because God doesn't bring things on us that are evil. And so when things happen that we think are bad, a lot of times it's just that our perspective doesn't align with God's on that situation and we don't fully understand it. And it's okay to be sad. It's okay to grieve. And it's okay to be, you know, to be hurting over things. And yet sometimes when we get away from them and get that perspective, we can go, okay, God was doing, this is where he brought me because he needed me ready for this next thing. And there's a real sense there where, you know, he's saying, these things are going to happen. This is why. It's coming from me. I'm allowing this for these reasons. Here's how you're supposed to respond.
I've had those epiphanies, though. Like, I'll be going through something in the moment, and I was like, man, had I not gone through this, going through this would have been like that. And then
right.
I catch myself,
you realize later, oh, that's why I needed to know that.
You know, like, I said it, and then after I said it, I went, oh, I just totally got my own. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm caught up now. Thank you.
Connection. Yeah. I get it.
So, did you want to add anything about Obadiah?
Oh, I'm just sitting here rereading it.
It's such a little,
yeah.
Tiny little power pack. Prophecy.
It's a reminder God's going to do what he says he's going to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Reminder we need to listen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, I would like to think that I'd be one of those people hearing this going, I've been a little lazy. Okay, let's get my act together. I read it now and I try to have that response, you know, and it's hard, though. And sometimes it's easy to feel distant from it because, well, you know, he's talking about all these things that don't. But it still happens. You know, it might be your neighbor. You know, there were churches we were involved with that started doing, you know, years ago, they started doing things that were just very unloving and very judgmental toward different members. And, you know, my mother and I left one night and we were both like, we can't go back there. We can't stand with what they're doing. It's not, are you getting tight?
Yeah.
You know, it's not righteous. We've got to be apart. And so we just started praying for them. And now that church, you know, this was what, gosh, I hate to say things like this because then I feel old, but it was 30 years ago. And it's, this church is still there, but it's completely different leadership, completely different attitude, completely different people, and all the things that we were praying for. And not because we prayed for them, but because they were things that are God's heart, you know, for grace and mercy and love and his word to be there and for the people to care for one another instead of showing judgment. And, you know, but it took all of those people who had that attitude either being changed or removed, and then God was able to bring new life to it. You know, which is what happened there. You know, God's saying, you can't stay, they can't stay in my land and do these things. So this is how I'm going to get them out. And don't be snickering over there when you see it happening, because it's just not your time. You know? Right.
Consider taking the log out your brother's.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it is. And a lot of the dialogue I've heard about that is the suggestion that the speck you think you see in your brother's eye might be the reflection of your log.
Yeah.
Which fits, because, you know, what bugs you about what other people do, usually the things that are reflecting on something in you.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise the things move you to compassion, or they move you to, you know, confusion, or, you know, a woman online was sharing about an interaction she had with her father-in-law, and I won't even tell you what it was because it was awful, and the things he said to her. And, you know, most of people are, you know, oh, that I'd be so angry. And I thought, you know, 10 years ago I would have been angry.
Yeah.
Right now I just want to cry, because that's a man who doesn't have enough room in his life for joy and love and relationships. And how sad to get to that age and not have those things leading you. It's sad. I mean, yeah, I get awful situation. I understand being angry, but, you know, Lord, root those out of me. Let there not be anything like that in me. Let me not get to 10 years from now and still be struggling with the things that, you know, I'm struggling with now or that I don't even yet know I'm struggling with. So it's a good thing.
I remember I had got a job when I was in college, and it was to tutor little kids at the Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things they said to me, they were like, you know, these kids come from messed up homes that were tutoring, and they get the stories for free. So, you know, they wanted me to be careful. But then they were saying that they were like, the kid that you get along with the least is the one that's most like you.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I got along with every single kid, and then here comes this one little nutcracker.
I can't do that.
He's like me.
But he is. Yeah.
I'm like that.
Yeah, he is. And then he ended up like being my favorite.
Yeah, because you grew. You grew. It's good that they warned you about that.
Yeah. That was weird. I was like,
well, your family, you know, the idea, your family's there to sharpen you. Yeah. You can't sharpen each other if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
With the whole coming to understand the Hebraic idea of blessings being something that God entrusts to you that you have the opportunity to become worthy of. And like each of my children, they brought, challenged something else in me, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to become worthy of you by dealing with this in me. And then I'll be able to, because... you know, children do as you do and not as you say. And so if you want to change that in them, if you want them to not have that struggle, you have to fix it in you and stop that struggle, because they'll be watching you go at those things.
That's just like the concept of when you're...
Yeah, and that's, you can say that. And yes, when that's the case, you probably should do what they're doing and or saying and not what they're doing. But it's an unrealistic expectation on them that they can continue in those things... and expect everybody else not to.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people yell at their kids, but then they act just like them.
Yeah.
But you didn't change.
Yeah.
But the time that concept reminds me of when you're on an airplane and they're like telling you about the oxygen mask.
Right.
You have to put it on yourself first and right. Then help somebody.
Right. Yeah. And the drowning person, you got to wait till they stop fighting.
Yeah.
You know, to get them out.
Yeah, when we was on the lifeguard train, they were like, you can't help somebody right. Fighting. And I'm like, dying out
yeah,
there.
They'll pull you
and
under.
Like, they'll pull you under.
Yeah.
And they're like, so you have to wait and tell them to stop fighting. So, because like they taught us, like you have to put your arm around
mm-hmm.
like, right here. You have to tell them to lean back.
Right. They have to be able to listen
like
to you.
And they have to be able to listen and do what you need them to do. So then add with this arm, you know. And, you
and that's what
head,
the prophets are.
They're like, if they don't stop doing like
the prophets
this,
are the lifeguards. The prophets are the lifeguards in that dying community.
Right.
And they go in, and there's going to be lots of people who are flailing about, not wanting to hear, can't stop to listen, not going to do it no matter what. But they're speaking to the people who are there ready to be rescued.
And the prophets
already
have their oxygen mask on.
Right.
They're
connected to God.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, God, tell me where, tell me when, tell me what. And that's the only thing they're doing. So, which is good for us, too, because when we go and try and... tell people what they should be doing and what they should be saying and how they should be acting, and they're not ready to listen to us. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not listening to God. It just maybe means they're not listening to us.
Yeah.
And you know, like he says to Edom, don't judge them. Don't think, you know, don't act all high and mighty. Don't think they deserve it. Don't think you're getting away with something. This is just the timing. This is how it's happening. Don't stand in their way. Don't turn over the ones who flee to you. And so when somebody is struggling, you know, pray for them. If it's not, like, if it's not a sin that leads to death, and you know, which on one level I take to mean, like, if they're not actually going to die right now from doing this, and they're not ready to listen, pray. Because God knows where they are. God knows their story. So let's pray real quick. Lord, I just ask you to help us to go out from today, heeding your word, seeking our own hearts, working on that log in our eye, showing love and compassion to our brothers and sisters, showing love and compassion to those who don't know you yet, because we are your example to them, and they are watching us to learn about you. which is terrifying. And what a responsibility, Lord. But let us, even in our humanity, be an example, willing to apologize when we fail, willing to make amends when we hurt, always seeking you in a way that what they see isn't us being perfect, but us being perfected and us reflecting you through the cracks in our jar of clay. Yeshua's name. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his countenance upon you and grant you his peace in this week. Amen.
Amen.
And safe travel for you. And have the most fun ever.
She's really comfortable.
I know. Is she making you take a nap?
Yes. I think she's putting you.
Babies have a way of doing that.
It's funny because she's like,
I know.
On her own hands. That is cute.
Yeah.
Like,
so thank you all for joining us today. Yeah. Hi. Oh, I am very tired this week. I want to go home and take a nap. I don't think I'm going to get to, but I want to.
Sounds like a good
one. Yeah. We have a...